Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Animal Talk and All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf. And today we have a packed lineup. We had four guests booked and a fifth one called in, a regular to the show. So we're definitely going to have five full segments for you coming up today. And to start, a couple of weeks back, you may have heard me on here with Autry Pruitt, who's one of my favorite special guests, co-hosts, friends of the show. But he should come with a disclaimer, big disclaimer that should say something like, this man does not own any dogs. This man does not own any cats. Because sometimes the comments he makes are a little bit off for the pet market. In particular, he was talking about the money pack. And he was saying the fanny pack, that nobody ever wears one and is completely outdated. And there I was watching TV, because he was saying this to a particular guest we had on the show. And there I was watching TV, and Autry was saying that nobody's worn a fanny pack in 25 years, and who could ever sell anything that could be worn with one, and all like this. He was going on and on. And I told him, you know, at the dog park, I do see a lot of fanny packs. It's a very convenient way to take your doggy bags and your poop bags and your treats and things. Anyway, so I see them. So they are fashionable. But then I was watching TV, primetime television, Housewives of New York City, no less, fashionistas, and one of them has a fanny pack, is talking about her fanny pack in the show, and the other one said that she's going to get one. They just came out with one by Chanel with a gold band, with a gold chain on it. So, I mean, seriously, maybe the fanny packs are making a comeback. Anyway, we've got something that could work with that. Could work with your dog at the dog park for sure. Water Rover. And we've got Rachel sharing it with us. Welcome to the show. So I was just introducing you and I was talking about fanny packs and Water Rover. And how do the two connect? Can you attach your Water Rover to your Chanel fanny pack now that Chanel is making them?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can attach it to your fanny pack. You can attach it to your waistband or your belt or your stroller or wherever you can hook something on.
Because you know what, if you're walking your dog at the dog park, it's not like you're unencumbered, but you don't have free hands, especially if you want a hand to maybe use your cell phone. Yeah, people don't beat up on me or text or take pictures of your dog, right? You might need your hand free for that, or you might need your hand free to hold a coffee or a drink or poop the scoop the poop when it happens. You can't exactly tie up your hands to hold the water bottle, that's for sure. So this comes in really handy. And you know what else? Last time we were talking on the show, and I mentioned that I've seen dog people share their water bottles with their dog and then drink out of it themselves. And I don't really like that practice. Even for me, and I like dog kisses, it makes me squeamish, you know? Well, Autry couldn't believe this. Do you remember that? He just was so shocked that. Okay, well, since then, I actually had a kid come up to me in the school parking lot, saw the logos on my van, knows who I am, came up to me to say, guess what? I trained my dog to share a water bottle with me. And I just thought, oh, no. No, does your mother know? You know, oh, no, you need Water Rover, girl. So it happens. We really need separate water bottles, don't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. For sure. Well, they're able to drink water we can't. Dirty water and things like this that we can't quite tolerate. They're different. And so when you're sharing with them and they've put their nose in their mouth in other dogs' leave behinds, like food, dead animals, poop, pee, you don't want to share with that. You're not the same, right? I mean, really, we need our own water bottles.
That's true. Very true. And it's also good, you know, if you're at the dog park and you don't want your dog sharing necessarily with other dogs from the little drinking fountains that they have there sometimes.
Oh, yes. I agree with that because there's so often, and I think it's lovely, right? When I go to a Starbucks or anywhere that has coffee or snacks or whatever, any cafe, and they put out a big bucket and it says, you know, help yourself or dog bucket. I think, oh, what a nice place. What a friendly place. I will shop here. I will come here. But no way I'm letting any of my dogs drink out of that. That's dirty, right? That's going to have every germ, bacteria. It's definitely got Bordetella swirling around in there, kettle cough that comes from spit. I'm not drinking out of there, neither of my dogs. So, I totally get you. Sometimes the options are bad, right?
Yes, yes, for sure.
Or unclean water. Because if you don't supply your dog with water and he needs water, he will find it. And it may not be good. That's
true.
Yeah. So where can they get Water Rover? Where can they have a look at it?
They can have find Water Rover. We mostly run the like mom and pop stores. They can go to our website, which is waterrover.com. There's a very easy to use store locator. If they just click on store and plug in a zip code, they can find a local store, and they can also order from us directly. If they choose to order from us directly right now, if they enter Pet Talk 5516, they will get 10% off and free shipping.
And so this allows them to take water for the dog and have their hands free, right?
Exactly. You just set the bottle down on the ground. You don't squeeze it or anything at all. You just set it down. The water will continue to flow into the bowl while your dog is drinking. And, you know, a lot of times they're out walking or at the dog park, they get distracted or they're just not thirsty. You just tip the water back into the bowl and put the plug back in, tip it back into the bottle, plug it up, and you're ready to keep going. It's the best way to give your dog water when you're out and about.
Well, yes. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rachel. Is there anything you want to tell people at home?
Just to make sure you keep your dogs hydrated, and we are also now made in the U.S., and we would love to have you support us keeping products here in the U.S. and also keeping your dog hydrated.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us today on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And that was Rachel from Water Rover. We're coming up next with Dr. Canfer. Oh, he's a veterinarian who's been with the show before. He comes to us from Florida, where climate plays a role, definite role. But he knows how to deal with all your animal health problems and pet problems. And I think he has a fat cat that I tease him about. So, you know, the veterinarians, they always lecture us on overfeeding our cats. And then once in a while, we catch them out. They've got a fat cat themselves. So, yeah, maybe we'll talk about that, because later in the show we have two cat experts on, and we're going to be talking about cats. And then at the end we've got Becky Starr, and as always, that goes on the doggy side, even though she's the editor of quite a few pet magazines, dogs and cats, and a magazine for veterinarians. She's with Redstone Media Group, but normally she and I tend to do the doggy talk. So we're balancing it out today with a little bit from the cat experts and then the doggy talk. And before all that, coming up next is Dr. Canfer. And if you've got a vet question, well, send it to us. I'll give you the call numbers when we come back at Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. You can call the show. Get ready to take it down. Coming back soon.
I'm your doggy, and I love you. And you know that I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And if you have a dog problem, a cat problem, an anything animal veterinary problem, a stubborn, hard to heal, hard to cure, need a second opinion kind of vet problem, should I see the vet or not problem, anything that you want to ask the doctor, now is your chance. 1-888-627-6008. You don't have a lot of time. We're only going to do this for about 10 minutes. If you use that number after that, you better come up with a cat question. that has nothing to do with vet med and has everything to do with how your cat's behaving. So that's the next segment, cat behavior, same number. This is the number for the station. And we've got with us for the next 10 minutes, Dr. Don Canfer. And he's coming to us from Florida. And we're going to be talking about everything, including what you call us with at 1-888-627-6008. Welcome to the show, Dr. Canfer.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. This is good. Long time no speak.
Yes, it's been a while. So are you still making a fortune off llamas and their needs, their needy feet and coats and everything to do with llamas?
Yes, today was actually yesterday was camels. Today was calves and alpacas and goats.
Wow.
So moving right
okay,
along.
Well, why do goats? For me, my goats don't need a lot of attention. They need shots twice when the first time I do it, a month apart, and then every year. And they need their feet trimmed, and they need wormer twice a year. And I think that's about it, right? Am I neglecting something major with my little pygmy goats?
No, you're doing good. Goats are actually very trouble-free animals. They are amongst my favorite animals to work on in the whole world because they're friendly, they're interactive, they're inquisitive, they're intelligent, they can't hurt you. They're just probably the best animal to work on from a veterinary standpoint.
I have a pygmy goat that is smaller than a miniature poodle. She is like the size of a lady's purse, you know, a big pocketbook. She is so cute, so cute. And she follows me around like little Bo Peep. She's just awesome. I totally get what you mean. But the boys, you feel the same way about the boys?
Yeah, the boys, you need to neuter them. And even the ones sometimes they can be... Yeah, sometimes they can be a little obstinate. They can be a little aggressive in their desire for attention. So
yeah, well, the intact ones can be a little bit messy and dirty, and they seem to view urine very differently from us humans.
Yes,
it seems to be cologne in their world. It doesn't seem to be something you go, you know, you get rid of. It's something you kind of celebrate, and I don't relate to that. So I'm out of there when it comes to the boy goats. In fact, I'm looking for a billy goat right now, the smallest pygmy boy goat I can find, but then I'll look to sell him right after he gets everybody pregnant because I don't want him hanging around. They're a whole other species. Do you have, when a llama makes the noise, the humming noise, I've read mixed things about that. Some people seem to think that that's aggressive and some people seem to think that that's like happy and a greeting noise. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, not really, but the humming sounds generally, and I've never correlated that with aggressive behavior on their parts. So
okay.
That's probably not. The hissing and the spitting is a little more aggressive. But when they do their kind of cuckoo thing, that I think that usually means curiosity or they're just interested.
Okay, so you say spit and everybody thinks, yeah, whatever, spit, farm animal. Maybe it's a drooler like a St. Bernard. That's not what you're talking about, are you?
No, they spit their cud. Now, they'll have a mouthful of cud and they'll just, you know, send it flying in your direction if they're not happy with you.
And it's not only is it gross, I mean, it's sticky and gross and spitty, just like you would think, and it's green in color. But I found anyway, not with llamas, but I worked at the zoo once, I found with camels, it's acidic. What's with that? It burns.
Well, it's got stomach acid. You know, they regurgitate it up out of their, they don't really have a rumen. They've got a 3-compartmentalized stomach. But yeah, it tastes like stomach contents. And it's not pleasant. It does make
a
mess.
So it's a weapon. It's more than just an insult, right?
Can't hurt you. It's just unpleasant.
Well, okay. So did you get spit on today?
No, I fortunately have actually only been spit on one time. That was a very, very long time ago, and that was an alpaca.
So what's your knack? Are you just nice to them? Is it the same as with any animal, just calm, gentle, food if possible?
Sure. Animals, I don't know. I guess that's why you become a veterinarian, because you have this natural rapport with the animals. But they seem to, most animals, despite their suffering and whatever you're there to do to them, prod them, poke them, stick needles in them, they genuinely tend to accept me. I rarely have trouble with animals. I can't count how many times I'll come out to a farm and someone will say, oh, doc, you know, there's the hole in the wall where the, you know, the mule kicked the last vet that was out here. Or, you know, they'll tell stories of what happened. And I'll just walk right up to the animals and they'll just stand there and let me do what I want to them. And people stand there with their jaws agape and, oh, my God, I didn't So
so much of it is what you're thinking when you walk in, what you're projecting. It's almost like I imagine when the kids hear, you know, I'm your new teacher, the last teacher retired because of you, right? Like it's like the last trainer is in the hospital. Now it's your turn to work the monkey cage, right? Like it's just not good news when you go in there and you get news like this, the teacher facing a class like that or the trainer facing an animal that's just hurt somebody. You have to kind of, you know it and you're ready for it, but you have to block it out. You just do, right? You block it out, don't you?
Yeah, you just got to go in there with a positive attitude. And it's like life in general. I've learned that over the years. If you just approach any task with a positive attitude, like, you know, we're just going to get this done, things generally go well. If you walk in there with trepidation and fear and uncertainty, then things generally will not go your way.
I think there's more to it than that with animals, though, because if you picture what you don't want to happen, which I think many people do, you know, they're afraid of dogs, or maybe they're just happen to be wearing a nice white dress and they see a muddy dog coming their way and they right away picture, don't jump up on me. And they picture the dog jumping up on them. Unfortunately, the dog's getting all that, but he doesn't get the don't part. He just gets the picture of him jumping up on you. You're better off to think, oh, walk right by me. Or sit down, or whatever it is you actually want, that's what you're going to get. So your body, whether you like it or not, signals a lot of things dogs pick up on.
Mm-hmm. And you've also opened up the other corollary, which is called Murphy's Law. And as veterinarians, we know that that is what regulates our profession. You know, our lives are dictated by Murphy's Law. And in veterinary medicine, probably more than any other field, it is so true. Whatever can go wrong will go wrong, and it's going to happen at the worst possible moment. And you just have to approach life that way. You just expect the worst, and if it doesn't happen, then you're pleasantly surprised. And if it does happen, well, then you're prepared.
What is the worst you've ever faced?
Well, you know, the worst, of course, is, you know, an injury to a person or an animal or, you know, demise of your patient. You know, that's something we always, you know, fear and never want to happen. But, you know, things can always go wrong. You know, you drop something in the dirt, you drop your hypodermic needle in or a needle in the haystack and can't find it, or, you know, your last dose of whatever it is, you know, there it is, you know, drop it on the floor. So, you know, things happen, but the worst thing we as veterinarians, you know, fear and dislike, of course, is something, you know, not positive happening to our patients. You know, our job is to make them better, not to, you know, make their situations worse.
It must be hard for you when people can't afford the care the animal needs.
It is. And, you know, when we had the economic downturn this, you know, these last few years, you know, we saw a huge increase, especially in euthanasias for large animals, you know, horses. People couldn't afford to keep them. A lot of them were being neglected, starved. We had a period of a year or two there around 2008, 2009 or so when, yeah, we euthanized a lot of animals. That fortunately,
that's terrible. That's really sad. I mean, and there are rescues. There are ways to get help for that. If you can't afford the care your animal needs, or you need a home for it, don't just give up. You know, look around, seek around, talk around, go to the local vet, ask if there's help, go to the SPCA, go to the shelters. There may be a volunteer or foster organization set up just to help you, especially if you happen to fit somewhere else, like you're disabled or you're elderly, or there's some reason why you're a family, there's something else available to you where you might be able to get the aid. Okay, well, we have to go, Dr. Kampfer. We only have a few seconds left. So where can they find you online?
Okay, well, online is hard to find me because we are in the process of redoing everything, but you can Google my name and somehow come up with me.
Okay, so Dr. Kanfer, K-A-N-F-E-R, everybody, K-A-N-F-E-R.
Yes. Or Paws Pet Talk radio station.
There you go. All right, everybody, stay tuned. Coming up next, we're talking cats. And so, let's see. Well, If you have a cat that isn't using the litter box, oh gosh, I hope you won't call. But Dusty wants you to call. I'm just, you know, there's only so many things we can say about the litter box. But of course, if you need to hear it, you're free to call. If you have a cat that's scratching, attacking, destroying, not listening, not happy, not bonding, anything at all with any cat, or maybe you have something anticipated like a big move, call us. 1-888-627-6008. We'll be back on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio in a moment.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that.
You know
I really do.
I really do.
Hello. You're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And that means this is Deb Wolf. Yes, of course. And we're talking with Dusty Rainbow. You know Dusty. Welcome back to the show, Dusty.
Well, thank you, as always. I love being here. I love visiting with you and your guests and your listeners.
Well, usually Dusty and I, we talk about cats not pooping and peeing in the appropriate places and scratching ankles and destroying things. And we do spend a lot of time on the poo and the pee because she's got a new book out, right, Dusty?
It's going to be out in September. It's called Cat Scene Investigator, Solve Your Cat's Litter Box Mystery.
Oh, lovely.
And it's about
the mystery.
It's about dealing with inappropriate elimination, which is the, pardon the pun, number one cause of cat surrender in the country. So
it's number one and number two. But okay, so we're going to take
a turn. Thank you for that.
Yes, we're going to take a turn now because normally we talk about cat problems and you call into the show and tell us about your naughty cats and you send us your emails. We will receive those. Send us your emails. We'll talk about them on a future show. But for now, we're kind of looking at something different today with Bill Johnston. And he's got a book out that sort of blends Garfield with The Secret. Yeah, The Secret to Life, to living happy and blissful, self-fulfilled lives like every cat does. So welcome to the show, Bill.
Dusty, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm Deb. That's Dusty, but that's
okay. I'm sorry,
okay.
Dusty. Dusty's in the middle of nowhere. I forgot.
Dusty's in the middle of nowhere.
Where is Dusty? I want to know.
I don't know, but wherever it is, there's probably many, many cats. That's my guess. And soon a little puppy coming, but that's for future shows. Right now.
But I want to hear about Garfield and Secret.
Yeah. What is this book really about?
Well, the book is, I'm from North Carolina. I live in Burlington, North Carolina. And 11 years ago, it was near... it was probably November, and we were living in a beautiful home in Greensboro, actually, at the time. And there was this stray feral cat that had been living in the storm drain across the street. And, of course, my wife and my daughter were feeding it. And I was just like, we don't need a cat. We've already got dogs and all this kind of stuff. And so anyway, the cat became very attached to us, but was very standoffish. But on Christmas Eve, when we're experiencing this incredible ice storm and we're inside and we're enjoying the carpenter's medley and the fireplace is going and it's a beautiful evening, outside, pressed against the window, screaming her guts out, covered with frozen ice, is our cat. And there she is. And so we opened the door and we let her in and we adopted her and made her a part of our life. And for 11 years, I have never been able to hold this feral cat. In fact, I believe if she was big enough, she would eat me. But
well, okay, now you're
you
getting into our territory there.
There you go.
But
there you go.
Okay,
it's so funny when you were talking to Dusty about cat litter and all that stuff. I mean, I'm sitting in my office and right next to me is cat litter and I've got one of those automated cat litter things and I'm telling you, I am in heaven with that machine.
Okay, well, not all cats like that.
Okay.
But it's good you figured out one that works for you and works for your cat, because sometimes that's the trick. Dusty and I, we tend to interview people. Okay, so what have you tried so far? And how many boxes have you got? And where are those boxes? These are the questions we ask people. But if you don't have that problem, that's good. You have a problem, though, even
What's
if
that?
You don't know it. You've got the problem, doesn't he, Dusty, of the aloof cat, right? The cat isn't bonding. Yeah.
Well, I mean, she'll let me pet her and she'll rub through my legs and all that, but I've never been able to pick her up and hold her. And usually, you know, when I try, if I ever to try to do that, I know she'd kill me. So,
what do you think about that, Dusty? You think I think that's okay? Do you think it should change?
I think the cat is doing what the cat was raised to do. You know, a feral cat is taught by her mother that people are not safe. And the fact that you can pet her is fabulous.
Yeah, I agree. That's
some feral cats never allow any handling at all. And so, you know, that's a huge compliment to you that the cat is social with you and wants to be with you. So I don't see a problem.
I don't either. And I'm glad you're respecting that about the cat, because sometimes people get a stray dog or a stray cat that's had a really hard life and they want it to be, you know, the dog that visits everybody and loves everybody at the playground. And it's a little unrealistic. In this case, hugging, what we like to think of as a very affectionate gesture when we sort of surround an animal and scoop it up and hold it. They only like that if we kind of teach them that very young, because it's really not very natural for them. I just want to ask Dusty, do you agree on that, Dusty, that like hugging a cat is like really, they just think you're attacking them, really?
Well, really, yeah, exactly, because what happens, they are prey to larger animals. So if you have a bobcat or you have a coyote, what do? They put their mouth around them, and it's all over. So, you know, touching the belly, holding a cat, that requires a lot of love and a lot of time. And it's, again, it gets back to that crucial socialization period between 3 weeks and 6 weeks. And if the cat isn't introduced to that kind of handling during that time, it takes time, and it can be very difficult to get them used to things like that. So,
but you know what?
I think you are Superman for doing what you said.
Yeah. No, we're both really.
Thank you,
impressed.
Dusty.
So, Bill, how does this book about this, you know, the way this cat cope with homelessness and getting adopted? How does that help people? Because I know your book is for people.
Well, I wrote this book to change the way people think, and what's interesting about this book is that you have this incredibly powerful subconscious mind. And if I were to ask you this question, what percentage of your brain right now are you using to conduct this interview or to do all these things? The answer might be 5% or less. And so your subconscious brain is 95% of your brain power, but we do not use it on purpose. And so what Strategies for Cats teaches you is how your brain, how your mind works. And so the story goes, it's a fun story, Kitty's living in a storm drain across the street from my house, and underneath the storm drain, there's a pack of rats that would just love to eat her, you know, for lunch or dinner. Mm-hmm. And so what she does is that she is trying to figure out, well, gosh, I got to get out of the storm drain before the ice storms come. And so one of the rats suggests, why don't you go over the hill? There's a nice cat over there living in a beautiful home. I'm sure he'll give you a place to live. Well, the other cat on the other side of the hill, his name is Big Jim. And the rat knew that if Kitty ran into Big Jim, Big Jim would wipe her out. And so the rats were salivating, thinking, if we could get the cat to go on the other side of the hill and Big Jim will just cream her, then we'll have a fabulous feast. And so Kitty is so desperate, she goes over there. And as she's going there, her subconscious mind is actually nudging her and warning her. But she's not listening. She's so blinded by the thought of having a wonderful home and food and a warm place to live and to stay away from the ice storms. And so it does happen. Big Jim completely wipes her out. And as she's struggling to get back to her storm drain and she's bleeding profusely, all of a sudden she can hear her subconscious mind talking to her. And so her subconscious mind, it helps her to get back to the storm drain. And then she receives this amazing miracle. And the miracle is she wants to live. And so the story is about Kitty living in a storm drain, and she's able to actually communicate with her subconscious mind. And so by reading the story, you learn how your mind works. And if you're somebody who's had a life that you'd like things to be better, you'd like a better relationship, you'd like some better pets, you would like a better job, you'd like a better home, the first thing you have to do is change the way you think. And so Kitty changes the way she thinks in the story, and goes from absolutely homeless, she doesn't even have a name, to living with a wonderful family in a beautiful home. So that's the story.
Well, that's strategiesforcats.com. Check it out, everybody. I'm going to ask you to stay, Dusty, for the next segment, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay, so thank you very much for joining us today, Bill. That was a great interview. I hope people will look you up, strategiesforcats.com. And I want to know what happened. So I'm going to have to check it out. Thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you so much, Deborah. And Dusty, nice meeting you.
It was great meeting you. I can't wait to read the book.
Okay.
Okay, everybody. We'll be back in a minute talking about the pet problems with Becky Starr and Dusty Rainbolt. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Dog Radio with me, Deb Wolf.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that.
You're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and this is Deb Wolf, as you know, and we've got Dusty Rainbolt hanging on, and I believe Becky Starr will be joining us as well. So welcome back, Dusty.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Have we got Becky Starr with us yet? Not yet? Okay, so we'll just talk with Dusty right now. I know your book's coming out, and all right, it's the dirty. It's the back end of the cat, is it? What's this book about?
It is the back end of the cat and what the cat leaves on the carpet. And it's called Cat Scene Investigator, Solve Your Cat's Litter Box Mystery. And it approaches inappropriate elimination from the perspective of a detective. And you have to figure out why your cat is having the problem. And of course, you know, we all think, oh, well, it's the cat's problem. Well, a lot of times we actually cause the problem ourselves. So it's the process of elimination and how you find out how to make things better for both you and your cat.
Okay, so it's not your cat pooping all over your carpet, peeing all over your things. No, it's not her, it's you. You're the problem. A lot of people don't want to accept that, but it's true, right? Because classic example, you put the one litter box for the many, many cats in an area that's creepy or scary for them, like right beside the dryer or the furnace or something. That's not going to work. It's just not going to work. You can get mad all you want, but it's not going to work. If you have more than one cat, you need more than one litter box, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, an excellent example, I have a friend that I thought was pretty cat savvy. And she calls me one day, and she's using traditional cat litter. And she says, it just smells. It's terrible. She's got like six cats. She has one litter box, and she changes it every week and a half. Well, I mean, I don't know why her cats weren't peeing all over the place. I mean, I wouldn't.
Oh, they were. They were. You know they were. She's just not admitting that part of it. They had to be. It's like when you go to a baseball game or something like that, a football game, and the men's room seems to be suited to the amount of men that are coming in and out of there. Because of the urinals, they got double, triple.
Of course.
It's a high-moving situation. And then you got the women's line. You miss most of the game just standing there. By the time you get to the front, you got to go around to the back again. That's what it's like for five cats sharing a litter box, just even if you cleaned it all the time. Right? I mean,
exactly.
Who wants to line up when you're bursting?
And who wants to go into a stall that hasn't been flushed by the guy ahead of you? So absolutely.
Yeah, not flushed by the guy ahead of you, and the floor is sticky, and the seat's all sprinkled, and there's no toilet paper left, and the door doesn't work. I mean, come on, people. Give your cat a place to go that isn't just vile, right?
Exactly. And even if it's not vile, if you only have one litter box and you have two cats, the dominant cat could be blocking the more shy cat. He may not be able to get to the litter box without getting his tail beat. So,
is something people don't get, because dogs, which are easier to understand in some ways and are more visual, more we're more able to watch them and learn their behavior. We see them taking turns peeing on a post. We see them being very, very social with their eliminations, right? No squeamishness at all about going at the same time, going in a yard in front of you, sharing a space to go. In fact, they seem to want to go on top of each other's leave behinds. You know, all this is going on in the dog world. Cat world's not like that. They don't want company in there. They want privacy and they want quiet and calm. So cat's not so likely to fight over food, but he's real likely to fight over the litter box, isn't he?
Exactly. So the rule of thumb is that if you have three cats, you should have three litter boxes plus one. So the rule of thumb
now,
is
the plus
number of cats.
One, sometimes if your cats are raised together and they're neutered and spayed young and none of them are too bossy, and, you know, sometimes you can get away with not the plus one. But as soon as you start having a problem, you need the plus one. And sometimes I get people who say, oh, but it worked for years. Sometimes when a cat gets older, things stop working because they get intimidated, whereas when they were in their prime, no one messed with them. Well, now they're too intimidated to cross by the other cat. See, that's the thing. You can't, it's so easy to tell when a dog's being bullied, but it's not so easy to tell when a cat's being bullied, right, Dusty? How can we help people recognize those signs of, you know, like I see it. The cat seems like he's just hanging out, lying down all mellow, but he's put his body exactly in the path of the one and only litter box, okay? That's not an accident. He's not there because... Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was going to say, it's almost hilarious to sit there and look at a cat blocking a litter box because they will lay on their side, and it all looks very casual, and the eyes are half closed, and we're not paying much attention to anything going on around them. But they've got their back legs kind of spread out in the back, I mean, in such a way that they're showing the cat, the less dominant cat, those back claws, because those are a cat's primary weapons. And nobody wants a piece of that. Nobody. So it's really important not only to have the number of litter boxes plus one, but to put them in different locations. Because if you put all three boxes next side by side, then that means he can block all the cats from all of the litter boxes.
But yeah, or even all in the basement, then he blocks the staircase. Cats are smart. They know all about the strategy of blocking a resource. Like, it's not accidental, right? I mean, I think people don't realize how much is going on between the cats when it comes to territory and who owns what, who has a right to that sunny spot at noon when it's always sunny, the highest ranking cat. But when it's shady, nobody wants it. Anybody's allowed to sit there. You know, there's all this stuff going on that people don't see, right?
That's exact. Boy, you nailed it. You nailed it. And so it's important that every cat have the resources he needs. And you would think that food and water wouldn't have anything to do with the litter box. But it does. If a cat is being deprived of food, then he becomes stressed, and that causes... inflammation of the bladder. And so, you know, it seems like there are just so many things that can go wrong with a kitty's bladder that have absolutely nothing to do with the litter box. And so in CSI, I go through all that. And it's funny. It's like my other books, you know. I mean, when you got cat pee, you don't want somebody lecturing you. But it does. It gives you an opportunity to investigate and look at things from a different perspective. So,
well, you know, you once, when we were talking about cat wrangling made easy back years ago, you once explained to me this whole thing about the sun and the sunny spots and the cats and when they want what. And, you know, it made me think of a timeshare. Right? Your place in Hawaii is way more valuable in winter than summer. That's just the fact. That's how cats work. They're so smart.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. I like to think of it as the types of territories that humans have. You've got your desk at work, and then you've got your car, and you've got your home, and, you know, some of us even have a vacation home. I don't, but, you know, okay, let's talk about, you know, a hotel room. That's your territory for a little while. So you have all these territories. They're not necessarily connected, and they're very small. And so, you know, if you're looking at a corporation, the president is going to have his penthouse, and the mail guy is going to have his little mail room in the basement. And then the president is going to have his Mercedes, and the little mail guy, the guy who delivers the mail.
Okay,
is gonna
Dusty,
have
we
his-
have... Dusty, we have to go to break. We're going to continue with this when we come back. We're talking with Dusty Rainbow. We're going to be welcoming Becky Starr. And we're going to continue on this whole breakdown of the cat territory on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you know
I need you too.
I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm coming to you from Camp Good Dog, where I see a big lab and a pit bull playing in a field, and it's not raining. I cannot complain about the rain. Also, in our province, there's a big fire, well, and then one next door. There's a bunch in our province, too. Fort McMurray is on fire. You may see it in the news, and I hope the animals are getting out there. I hope people are helping any way they can all along the route, because there's going to be a lot of displaced pets and people. And you should be checking on your emergency setup. Are you prepared? Do you have what you need? Do you have food and water for a few days, meds for your pets? Are your pets cage trained and labeled well? You got to do that. So get on that. We'll talk about that more in a future show. Right now, we're coming back with Dusty Rainbolt, who is a cat expert we've had on the show many times. She's one of my favorites. Been talking to her for a very long time. We met through the Cat Writers Association. And we're not very catty. That's really a myth that cats don't like each other. Actually, cats and cat people like each other just fine. Thank you very much. And we're also going to be talking with Becky Starr, who represents a whole bunch of magazines, including a cat magazine. And she's from Redstone Media Group. So, Becky, Dusty, I'm introducing you to each other. Dusty, meet Becky. Becky, meet Dusty.
Hi, Dusty. I actually met you some time ago on another show. I'm glad to be hearing your voice again. Been keeping up on you.
I remember. Yes. Well, it's good to speak with you as well.
I think it may have been my show a long time ago, like a year ago.
Yes, it was.
I think it was my show. I'm having a little deja vu moment. Well, okay. So Dusty was breaking down cat territory for everyone, and it was pretty fascinating. She was talking about how, you know, you might have your desk territory, a human, a car territory, a vacation home territory, a home territory. And then I think I'll let you continue from there, Dusty, where you left us before the break hanging on the cat territory.
Well, the point is that a cat's territory isn't a big spot like a dog's, because a dog would be like a yard, but a cat's territory, like the owner of the company, he's going to have the penthouse, which is going to be the top cat tree. He's going to have the automobile, the equivalent of the automobile, which might be the back of the couch during during a sunny part of the day. One of the litter boxes. So they're strewn all over the place, and it just depends on what time of the day, who the cat is, as to the territory. And so just because your cats, they just need enough territory, and that also has a lot to do with litter box problems. If the cats have their territory, then they're going to be happier, they're not going to feel threatened, they're going to be able to go to the bathroom in a safe place. So
There was this documentary, I think it was Nature Things, I'm not sure exactly, I saw on TV, where they put GPS collars on cats, house cats, regular house cats that were allowed out. It was in the Montreal area. And they, you know, urban cats, like normal subdivision in an urban area. And they watched how far they went and their routes. And most of the cats regardless of whether they were neutered or spayed or male or female or anything like that, most of the cats went between 4 blocks and 8 blocks from their homes. But what was striking to me was the fact that it was almost like a policeman's beat. They did the exact same route in the exact same way, in the exact same order, lingering the exact same amount, exact same time of day, whenever they could. And it was like they were purposefully avoiding each other almost. It was really, really interesting to see. But they have a wider range than I would have thought.
That is more than I thought as well. But it makes sense because that they don't want to come in contact with another cat because they don't want to get into a fight. So, you know, if you get into a fight, you could get an infection, which could kill you. Cats don't fight to the death, but, you know, you don't want to break a claw. You don't want to break a tooth because then you can't defend yourself and you can't eat. So that's why they have those schedules. It's just like, it's timeshare. That's exactly what it is. It's timeshare.
Can I bust in on this and ask a question?
Sure.
While you were talking about territories, my brain was rambling. I don't have cats. I haven't had any cats for many years. I'm a house full of dogs. But I find that my dogs have the same territories, right? They go to a certain spot when the sun is out. It's their particular toys, their particular bowl, their particular space. One doesn't touch the other ones. So don't you find that it isn't just a cat thing, that the dog has a territory just as much for consideration? Or is there something different about the cat territory versus a dog, you know, protecting his territory, his yard, his walk path?
It's different. It's different. It's not that dogs don't have it. In fact, it's just dogs' territory for humans usually is easier to see. It's more obvious what they're fighting over. They fight over food. They fight over people. They fight over attention. They fight over area. They protect turf. And usually a female dog will protect the immediate area around the home if there's a boy and a dog living in the same address. And the male will sort of be the further ranger, maybe the perimeters and beyond, maybe the block. But the reason it's interesting with cats, the reason we brought it up is because most people don't think of cats in this way at all. Right, Dusty?
That's exactly right. And it could have to do with the time that makes a piece of property or territory premium. It could be because the sun is in the windowsill at that particular time of the day. So a particular cat has the windowsill at that time of day, then he vacates it. And as Deb said, they time everything so that they don't have to come in conflict.
Whereas with a dog, they would time it the other way, purposefully to have it out. Like, who are you on my turf? Let's deal with this. Who gets to be here? You know, they kind of are more confrontational most of the time.
Well, and the dogs don't have timeshare. Their territory, I believe, is their territory. And cats, the territory may be theirs at a specific time of day.
That's an interesting difference, actually. I'm wondering about that. Maybe there would be a more, it would seem like timeshare, like say a particular area had a food source at a time of day, like a butcher truck comes and dumps his leavings in the back alley at 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock, the dogs would fight over that alley, but they probably wouldn't fight over it later. But that's not really the same thing, or is it?
No, it's not.
Maybe it is. The sun is the thing the cats fight over. So fascinating how they're different. Hey, Becky.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, we all know cats are very unique and individual species, and dogs are a little more not so hard to read, as you were saying. You kind of know a dog, even though, of course, there's personality difference. And cats, it's always you're kind of wondering, you know, what do they have going on in their head? Why do they do the things that they do? There's just not that kind of openness, you know, with a cat and a dog. So I was thinking while you were talking about that is it's then more kind of an intuitive thing, right? Where cats really are not okay to share where dogs learn to be okay to share. Is that
well? There are exceptions to that. No, not exactly, because and you know, like I have cats in my home that love each other, cuddle together. They're two sisters who do it. But there's also the cat from next door who, for some reason, all my cats tolerate coming and going like he's part of the family. I don't think he's part of the family, but they do. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't pick that one.
They're accepting. Well, but
they like him. They hang with him. It's more than accepting.
Cats can live together if there are enough resources. And, you know, resources are a lot of things. As Deb said earlier, resources could be food, but it could also be litter boxes. It could also be toys. It could be the sunny spot. So, it's just cats are hard. it's really hard.
It's really creating a lot of individual space for cats and making sure that they have that available.
But exactly. Some cats do get along well enough to cuddle together, to share toys, share space, share food.
Of course.
Yeah, some are really bonded, and they're not always siblings or relatives either. Sometimes cats will bond unpredictably, you know, so it's very individual, I guess, like with all of us, really.
Well, and a lot has to do with how were they introduced. I mean, you know, did you just throw them together? Or did you introduce them slowly so they have a chance to get used to each other in the territory? And I guess you probably have to do the same thing with dogs, but probably in a slightly different manner, which I'm going to need to learn about soon. So,
Dusty, the cat lady, she's finally getting a puppy again. Woohoo! Yeah,
really?
That's going to be interesting.
When?
I'm
when
going down
the
dog side. I'm getting a dachshund in a couple of weeks. Yes, standard dachshund. So we're really excited, and we're going to introduce him slowly to the kitties. And so I'm sure you'll be hearing about it.
Well, the only caution I have for you, a couple cautions actually, is your dachshund blue-eyed?
No.
Okay, so forget that part.
He's black and tan. Black and tan.
And the second caution with dachshunds, but with any dog that has that short legs, long body, is the thing that injures them most often is jumping down from things. So in other words, you know, they're young, they're hyper, they're happy. They jump onto the bed. Everything's good. They follow you because you leave the room. They jump down from the bed and they hurt themselves. So it's a good idea right away when your puppy starts growing and starts jumping up on things that you kind of have some safety measures in place. It can be as simple as an ottoman or a footstool or a plastic step stool, but just so that when it's jumping up onto things, you know, it takes that extra step. It's not a huge 2.5 foot drop back down because they're just not built for that.
Well, I've had several dachshunds and never had back problems, but I also don't let them on the furniture. So.
Oh, even better solution. Listen to you, tough mama. I'm such a wimp. I'm all about, I'll turn your dog off, but mine are allowed on everything. Yeah.
On that note, though, Deb, you're absolutely correct. And it isn't only about, I always have small dogs or long bodies or that type of thing through my history. And yes, I have ottomans and footstools on each side of my bed. You know, I train them from the very beginning where they come up, where they go down, because I have had a dog that ruptured a disc in his spine and went paralyzed in the rear. And one of the things, though, it isn't just about
really the common, Dusty. It's really, really common with the breed. So
and it isn't just about teaching them right away, right, about coming up and down off things. But even, and this just makes my hair stand on end, you know, when you get a puppy or even as they grow and people play with them, right? And they'll have them leaping up, you know, to get a treat or jumping up or doing circles or, you know, other people create your dog, right? Here, jump up and get a treat. Here, do this. And these tricks and things. And that was, you know, a big consideration because my dog was jumping up, you know, on a fence toward the postman coming by and landed wrong and ruptured the disc. So I have always been hesitant, you know, not letting anyone who comes over here, do not make my dog jump up for a treat. Do not make him do circles and rollovers and things like that, because these are the kind of simple moves that you don't think about that make that spine go.
Well, thank you for that. I will definitely remember that as we are starting to learn and introduce them to other people. So.
Yeah, you just got to get the people under control. You know, my big problem with people
is way easier than the people.
Oh, totally. Sure. With you get these golden retrievers, golden doodles, these boisterous, love everybody kind of dogs, and the owners are struggling to teach this dog to stay down when it greets people, to not mm-hmm. knock the milk flying, knock the baby flying, scratch the stranger, send the groceries. You know, like who wants a jumping 90-pound, 65-pound dog? Nobody. So they're trying their best and people say, it's okay. I don't mind. And it's like, no, please don't train my dog to jump on you. You won't like it always. And some people are quite afraid. You know, it's not fair. So yeah, if you get people like that, what I usually do is I actually make them part of the training. I have extra treats or a ball, whatever it is the dog's going for, and I say to them, would you mind helping me with this? They are always willing because they're the people who want your dog's attention anyway. And you give them the cookie or the ball, and then you make your dog sit for it. And you turn what's a practice of the worst habit possible into a learning practice. And then your dog starts running up to strangers and sitting, which is so much better than running up to strangers, right? I had this Rottweiler who would bring his ball and he would look around the park and he would see what man had the best throwing arm in the park. And then he would run up to that guy and sit down and drop his ball and look at the ball, look at the guy, look at the ball, look at the guy. And then if the guy moved, he'd follow him, right? And I mean, I met a lot of men this way, I gotta say. Not intentionally.
Dog tips.
Yeah, how to train your dog to score. No, and if you're a guy, get a little wee dog. Go up to girls on picnic baskets. Yeah, picnic blankets and bring their ball. No, not my recommendation. It just happened. So, okay, Dusty, I look forward to hearing more as your cats meet your puppy. And good luck with the book that's coming out. Becky, she's got a new book coming out.
I was listening. Congratulations, Dusty. That's great.
Thank you. I am excited, and I hope it helps a lot of people make peace with their cats and keep their carpets clean.
Because you know what? It is a serious problem. It's the number one reason people get rid of cats, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's the number one euthanasia at shelters, the number one cause of death. I'm sorry. It's true. Sorry about that. But of healthy cats in the United States. So my goal is to reduce that and help people understand their cats. So
nice one. Okay, Becky, well, I hope I'll talk to you again next week because I know we still have to talk about airplanes and pets.
I know, next week.
We'll get to it. Just, you know.
You're if just people dragging are this out.
Wow. We had to take a walk on the cat side with Dusty, her new book coming out and everything.
Absolutely.
And she said it was the number one problem pet owners had. And I had to correct her and say, no, it's number one and number two. But
it's all numbers involved.
Yes. Well, but you know what? It's true. These cats, there's nothing wrong with them. They could be great pets. But they're peeing and pooing in the backs of closets, in carpets, on people's things. And the people think it's unsolvable, but it's not unsolvable. It's so dead simple. It's not even a lot of effort. You know, Dusty taught me that it's about 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, and a cat's bad habit is gone. So, I mean, it's really, and that sounds like a long time, but once you get, if your cat is the victim of bullying and he can't get at the litter box, it's not his fault. Once you get a new litter box in a different area, he didn't want to have that bad habit. You just gave him no choice. So her book helps you figure it out.
I have to add is anytime your cat suddenly starts mm-hmm. missing the litter box, take him to the vet. That's number one. Pardon the pun.
because it could be something that's just a pill for 10 days and it's over. You don't have to get rid of the cat. It could be something simple like that or crystals in the urine or something that's a problem, a health problem. And then there's no point in scolding the poor little guy. It's not his fault. If you get the vet ruled out, you need the book to figure out why he's doing this. And now
you've
got the book. There you go, Dusty. How do they get your book?
You got it. And the book will also help explain how the health problems affect the litter box use, too. So,
well, how can they get your book, just before we go quickly?
Well, it's not available yet, but it'll be available in August. So
in August. Oh, coming soon. Almost.
Yes.
All right.
Cat scene investigator.
All right. So,
solve your cat's litter box mystery.
In the meantime, if you have a cat that isn't peeing or pooing in the right place, if you have a stubborn problem that you think you just had enough, well, then email the show. We'll talk about it on air, and we'll even take your call on air. We'll solve your pet problem for you. You don't have to wait till the book comes out in August. If you were a little earlier, you'd be part of the book. But we'll solve your problem live on air. And Becky Starr from Redstone Media Group, I hope you'll join me again next week to talk about airplanes and pet travel.
I'll be holding my seat.
Okay, everybody. Until next week, from Becky, from Dusty, from Deb, that's me, at Smart Animal Talk and All Paws Pet Talk Radio, be good to your animals.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And anytime you're near.